We are stuck in an in-house separation. How do we move forward? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
Hey, Tyler.
Brandon, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well.
Did you cut the top of your hair at all?
Oh, yeah.
You did?
Big time. Big time. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, you still got some body, but it looks a lot shorter.
Enough about my hair. I want to move on from my hair.
The only reason I'm bringing this up is because I know this is kind of that area where, you know, dad loves to talk about your hair. Right. So I'm just making sure we cover that before we get started.
Hey, I've always wanted a mullet in honor of Joe Diffie and Neil McCoy. And now I've done it. I'm living my dream.
You actually, especially with your facial hair, look like
Travis Tritt.
You could go to Vegas and be a Joe Diffie lookalike right now.
Oh, that is the biggest compliment I've ever had. A lot of people are like, who is that? I got to Google that guy.
Hey, Googling Joe Diffie.
Joe Diffie had a lot of hits. And he, hey, rest in peace. He died of COVID like 2 years ago.
Yeah, he did. He was one of the first ones to fall.
But man, what an epic mullet.
Yeah, he had a great mullet.
Joe Diffie. So, yeah.
Anyway, let's jump into it today, Brandon. We got we're actually kind of a treat for us. We have Chris and Jesse with us today. Chris and Jesse have both actually done some work with me, and also have spent some time at both of the retreats. And so it was good to see them today. Chris and Jesse, it's been a while since we've talked. Welcome to the show, and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you guys want to just give a little bit of background, tell us where you're at, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I'll give you a little background and then catch up to current question that we want to focus on. So I've had a sexual addiction for most of my life, right? Started in early adolescence and kind of off and on, but mostly on, 41 now. So it's been most of my life. Primary forms of acting out are pornography and masturbation. We've been married 18 years and in change. And prior to marriage, was disclosed, but then even, after disclosing like the addiction part of it, started a pattern again of lying and hiding, and then either discovery or getting honest myself. So that's been our pattern. Didn't really start any recovery until about 2016 is when things started to change a little bit for me. So I'd say I've been working some form of recovery since 2016, sometimes more intently, sometimes less, and increased periods of sobriety, but still not, long-term maintained. And Jesse around that same time, and you can interject in just a second too, has done kind of her own work and all of that stuff. Similarly, we've seen individual counselors, marriage counselors, and been to a couple retreats. So kind of fast forwarding, in last year, about this same time, I've had a few slips. Doesn't really matter how you categorize them, but was not honest with anyone in my recovery community, my groups, my therapists, Jesse, and then that culminated in like more acting out with porn and masturbation in the kind of September to mid-October range numerous times, and then got honest in November. So that started a in-house separation, and that's been the state since early November of 2023. So that's kind of where we're at now. Since the in-house separation, it's just been, I would say it's been kind of rough, kind of rocky. And there's been a little bit of additional acting out that have disclosed. But then there's been some conflict on even in that time period of the in-house separation, understanding what Jesse wanted to know and didn't want to know. Outside of like the in-house separation, it's a little bit more clear. So I would say that's kind of where I would put us. I don't know what you would add, Jesse.
I think I would add, you know, even in the story, right, in the telling of the story of our life, and in the last year plus, there isn't a shared narrative. I would say that for sure. So that's a big struggle for me. I think the expectations around what it looks like if there's going to be a rebuilding, there's just not any kind of alignment on that.
Okay. So Jesse, when you say there's no shared narrative, basically, just so I'm clear, whatever the story is that Chris just told us, that's not the way that you actually see it, and you have a totally different story. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't say a totally different story, but there are pieces of it, details that feel important to me, and that we don't agree on, as far as you know, what to call the places we've been, how to categorize the state of our relationship, you know, how to categorize even what honesty is, or what, you know, what disclosure is, or what what expectations are there. So that's what I would say. It's more in the details of it. It's less in the big picture and more in the details of it.
So there's kind of a divide where, and what it sounds like is that you're having a hard time communicating to get on the same page to have that shared narrative. Is that accurate?
Yes. I mean, we obviously haven't reached any sort of agreement on that.
Okay. So can I ask you guys, you started in November of 2023 after, on the heels of kind of a period of relapse and dishonesty, Chris. What was the intention, and what is the intention for the in-house separation right now? What are your purposes for that?
For me, I would say, number one, I just needed some space and some time to make sense of what I had felt like the last year, what was going on over the last year, and to recalibrate sort of my trust in my own intuition and self. There've been some not just lies of omission, but, you know, dishonesty, direct dishonesty there as well. And so I needed some time for that. I felt like I needed some time to do my own work and get, it was also in a period that was pretty hard. I just started school again and, had a grandfather who wasn't doing well. And anyway, some other life things that, that were feeling really hard. And, I felt like I just needed to get out of the way and watch and see what happened. So that was it for me.
And Jesse, can I ask you, what have you seen as you've gotten out of the way, taken a step back? What have you noticed during this in-house separation?
I'm trying to answer that without being like,
staying
in my own lane a little bit. I would say
I could interject on the first 2 months. Maybe it's easier.
The first 2 months were awful.
Yeah,
and he and
gaslighting.
I was not treated well.
I was full of anger and not kind in the communication and not surrendering where I need to and accepting reality, just really angry at the process, angry at myself, angry at where we're at, angry at Jesse. So first 2 months, I really was not in a place of surrender and really trying to look at, more holistic recovery and like actually having an attitude and a heart to want to change and to do something different.
So we're talking from December. Like November to December.
Yeah. End of December started to change for me. But again, it was at the very end of December.
And I would say since then, I feel like there's been a little less of that kind of, that level of negativity coming my way. But there still has been sort of a wanting of a timeline and to know what the expectation, what do I have to do to, you know, tell me what you want, what do you need from me?
I see.
And so part of my process has been getting to where I don't want to explain what this looks like to go forward. I want you to decide who you are and what you want to be. And hopefully take this time to do that. And then come back with a commitment to who that is, what that looks like, what your life looks like, Excellent. What your recovery looks like. And I'll see if it works for me. But I don't want you to tell me what I want here. I don't want you to do the thing so that you can then resent me later. I'm not interested in that. I wanted to see a digging in and a finding of self and values and commitment. And instead I sort of feel like I'm still getting the, like, clock is ticking. What's it going to look? When can we, you know, this and that. And what
is it, Jesse, are we talking about sex? Like, is that kind of what you're talking about? I realize it's separation. I realize it's all the other things, but it sounds like there's a pressure to get to a place where you can have sex. Is that?
Oh, I mean, I think my sense is that's definitely a piece of it, but it goes it's much broader than that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But there's that pressure. There's that, whether it's sex or not, there's that pressure of when are we going to be close? When are we going to have intimacy?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
It's an interesting place to be because that pressure probably actually contributes to the continued desire to do those things that you want. I want space. I got to figure out my self-trust. I got to get out of the way. And the more pressure you feel, the more inclined you probably are to put your arms out even further and keep it at further arm's length, right?
Yeah. And I would say it's a struggle for me to find the balance because I think in some ways I've gone from being a very codependent, peacekeeping, want to not make, you know, make everything as smooth as possible to the pendulum is swung and I'm like, don't you push me to do a thing. And so I'm trying to stay in the heart of it, stay in the part of my heart that doesn't want to be bitter or be, you know, angry or be mad or mean, but also stick up for what I need and what I want and be confident in that.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris, please.
I hear what you're going to say. But so we had in early January, mid-January, we had decided that at least through the end of March is when we'd reevaluate things in the in-house separation. And that was basically a reconsider where we're at. So that on the pressure side, there's probably my own codependency stuff and things I can work on, and happy to hear your guys' thoughts on that and wherever else you're going to go. But there was a timeline that we had set, and we really don't know we've really not been able to have any successful conversations of even what the next phase looks like, because it felt like it was pressure. There's other things with travel and stuff that came up before the end of March that we're trying to schedule around, and that kind of set off a time bomb of me bringing it up, like, hey, mid-March or something like that, or a little bit before that. What's the process going to look like? Do we need to set up some appointments with counselors to talk through this, etc.? So that, though there probably is some real pressure, that's also part of the perceived, in my vantage point, pressure of like just trying to schedule the conversations and things. And that kind of ended up spiraling on every one of those attempts. It didn't end well. And really, our conversations haven't gone well And I do experience Jesse as very negative of late on me and who I am and all of those things. And so that's part of the challenge for me, is trying to stay in it and like own that, accept that, hold space for that. But it's literally almost like every conversation of late is very, very negative. And it's hard for me to keep showing up like that. And so I haven't always responded well. I haven't always held space and had empathy for her. And that doesn't help, but that is the reality for me right now.
Okay. Tyler, do you have,
I think, I was just going to acknowledge that, Chris, what you're saying kind of brings out one of the reasons this gets really difficult, is because there's a little bit of a dialectic going on in both of the ways that you guys just described those things. Like, I'm with Brandon. I love that, Jesse, you actually took the space for what appears to be the right reasons.
Yeah.
And you actually tied into something that would be very true, that if Chris made decisions on the manner of man that he wanted to be, and he started working towards that plan without anyone coercing or compelling or telling him to do it, that would speak much louder than giving a recipe of do all these things and then we can get back together. So that's, that side of it is true.
Sure.
But Chris has also got a valid point on the other side of the dialectic, which is, and it would make sense that we at least have some kind of a structure, a plan of moving forward and what kinds of conversations we should be having. And then Chris, the other side of this is, I can also see that, you know, when you got somebody like Jesse, and I think Jesse just acknowledged this, like, I realize that I've swung and I'm trying not to swing so far, but I have, like, and she's acknowledging that it is hard for you to then hang in there, and it can be very easy to continually come back to getting lost in Jesse and how she's seeing you and how she's treating you and taking that all personally and dropping into your old places of shame, rather than continuing to keep your eyes on the prize, so to speak, of who do I want to be today, regardless of whether or not my wife is kind or not, or mean, or in the picture, out of the picture. And losing sight of that actually then puts you guys back into the place of doubling down on getting stuck with each other again. And I know that's really, really difficult.
For me, I mean, that sounds correct. That yeah. feels correct.
Yeah. I wonder, like, you guys have been married how long now?
18 years,
18 and a half years. And so last November, this all blew up and an in-home separation happened, but there's been issues, I imagine, long before this, ups and downs. And,
oh yeah.
And the pattern of the addiction and all that stuff's been known and not dealt with well by either of us, both of us, me at times. Like, so it's been an ongoing process. It did blow up again after we'd done a formal disclosure a few years ago, like 4 or 5 years, I don't know.
Six
years ago, and lie detector tests and all of those things. And then recovery, the premise of recovery. And so to your point, yes, it did blow up again, absolutely, by deceiving and lying, both overtly and directly to Jesse and to my community.
Okay. So yeah, lie detector tests, formal disclosures, retreats, therapy, a lot of stuff, a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort has gone in for years. How do you guys make sure that whatever you do right now, you don't just end up in the same tumultuous pattern for years to come? How does real change actually start to set in, instead of going through these same cycles of a year from now, there's another relapse, more lying, more gaslighting, more broken trust. And how many of these can you tolerate, right?
I can't. And I think that's the crux of the issue at this point, is like, you know, I can't tolerate that pattern anymore.
And so I agree with Tyler that it's fine, Chris, for you to say, I want a structure and a plan to move forward. Mm-hmm. I'm having a hard time seeing what Jesse's doing wrong other than maybe being negative and attacking you in some ways, Jesse, what you're doing in terms of taking space and handing his recovery to him is probably really hard and really difficult to say, or maybe you're to the point where you're done with it, so it's really nice. But handing it over to him and just watching to see if he's going to go do that real core work on his recovery to create that long-lasting change in his heart, that's awesome. And we're talking about major gaslighting and manipulation up to 3 months ago. Like, this is not has not been a long time. And just because she said the end of March we reevaluate, that doesn't mean that automatically we move into these things. Jesse, you need to be honest with yourself about how you're feeling in terms of your safety.
Mm-hmm.
And your willingness to get close. And if you don't feel trust, you shouldn't dive in the deep end. And I actually applaud you for not. Now, Chris, as I'm saying this, I'm wondering what you're thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I whatever space she needs is the space she needs. And that's the reality. Accepting that indefinitely, like I have my own codependent parts where I do both codependently, probably on the unhealthy side, and on the healthy side, do crave the emotional connection and intimacy. And the indefinite part of that, it would be one thing if she just sat there and observed, but she doesn't just sit there and observe. So there's a lot of like comments and negativity.
I'd say I haven't maybe for the last couple weeks, maybe month. I've been about what I'm seeing as we've begun the conversations about what it looks like to move forward.
And the expectation that she has, and she hadn't said it here, which is fine, is that I'm just completely different. While that might be true, it's also hard to just do that, right? Like I'm on the process of that change and trying to change my heart and keep working, right? There are good days, there are bad days, there are ups and downs. But go ahead, Brandon, what were we going to say?
Well, you mentioned two things, and I don't want to just brush over them, because you said, yeah, I realize my codependency and needing her to like me is important. Like, and that is not just like something that should be brushed over. Like, that is the crux of it, is why is that codependency there? And what needs to shift so that you're not using her for your self-worth? Now, Jesse, he brought up, yeah, but sometimes she's mean to me. He didn't say it in those words, but like, recently, the last few weeks, you know, she's been kind of
that's fair.
And you know what? That's something that you can work on. Like, you don't want to be mean. You don't, but and to deal with your emotions of resentment or anger or frustration in a more healthy way is something that you can work on.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you need to go up and kiss him and hug him and be close to him, right?
Yeah.
And so can you see how there is both sides for things that you guys needed to take accountability for and work on? But Chris, that codependency piece, I'd love to dig into, because digging into that, we could find some of these wounds that are at the base of all of this. And it's not about changing your heart. That's not what needs to happen. It's about rediscovering your heart and knowing who you are and loving yourself. That's what the work is, so that you get to a point that you don't need Jesse, and because you don't need her, you can love her, and you can tolerate her anger or whatever, and you can have boundaries with her. So do you guys see that?
I do. I'm just starting. I've done some parts work. I'm just starting my own journey on mindful self-compassion workbook, you know, with, I think that's Kristen Neff. And anyway, like, mm-hmm. I think some of those things are needed. There's no doubt, like in my own kind of identity and firmness in my identity, and distancing myself from codependency and being independently well, for sure, there's still work to be done. I've done some work on that. I think part of the challenge is, and maybe it's not just me, I know it is definitely me, but the indefinite part of it and the turmoil and the negativity, that's the part that's particularly challenging to just stay in it. Like, yeah, I can keep working my stuff, but that doesn't change that, like, while I'm working my stuff, I'm getting grenades thrown at me regularly, right? Like, that's the challenge of, like, trying to stay doing the work that I know I need to focus on, like you were just talking about, versus survival when it gets rough between us. And most of the communication between us, unfortunately, and I get part of it's space, etc., but has been via text, which is not helpful over the last 5 months, and very hard to convey things. Like, in-person conversations have not gone very well.
I think Chris, you just actually agreed with what Brannon was saying, partly with what you just said. And I don't blame you. Like, man, my heart goes out to your side of this, Chris, because I can feel, like, and I think a lot of people will understand what that feeling of, I'm working on my own shame resiliency. That feels like a massive uphill battle. I'm trying to fight all of my old false beliefs and agreements and personal traumas. I'm feeling a disconnect in my relationship, which is the place where I want it to feel the safest. And that disconnect is really hard. And there's no set time, so I can't hold on and white knuckle until the next place where I get the next touch point. And then that elevates my codependent tendency to want to then lean in and hurry and figure out what the next touch point is. But now that comes across as needy and consuming and hurry and get better rather than, but it's really coming from a place of that insecure attachment and that fear and that codependency. And that, when you stack all those on top of each other, it's really, really difficult to manage all of those emotions. And there's a tendency to then drop into any of those shame screens that then fuel more disconnection, where I'm going to get defensive, or I'm going to blame her, or I'm going to do this or that or the other. That's human. And what I'm hearing you say, Chris, is at least if you guys could acknowledge that those things are happening, that work is very intense and that it's difficult, maybe there'd be a little bit of grace, as long as there's still accountability to be working on those things, right? In essence, the way that the pathway forward here with what Brannon's saying, at least one part of the pathway forward, and I agree with him, is if I look myself in the mirror today and I set an intention on the kind of man that I'm going to be regardless of who my wife is, and I work towards that intention with everything that's in my tank, I am a success today. And if I put that many days in a row of being a success of my intention of who I want to be today, the byproduct will be that my wife is actually seeing a man who's living with intention towards the values he wants to live, and there will be little drops of trust that start to go into the bucket. But every time that painful part of me steps back in and says, and I need her to see it, or I need her to acknowledge it, or I need her to just not call me a name today, or I need her to, like, then all of a sudden I'm pulled away from the actual place where I'm moving forward and inviting a change to the relationship. And so part of my work is to recognize that and come back over and over again to, who am I going to be today? Who, what do I like seeing in the mirror today? Regardless of what portion of my wife I see or get today. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, it makes total sense, and it's exactly accurate. Like, it resonates and is the path that I need to keep walking 100%. Like, that is there. I would follow up the question, though, and maybe I just have to surrender it, like, and just not. But, like, what structure should we have, could we have? And that's part of the question of, like, okay, is that just indefinite? Fine, that's my life and that's my path I need to walk. But relationally, is it just indefinite where there's no kind of structure? How do we rebuild? We really don't have structure on anything. And that's the part of the confusion of, like, okay, well, I can keep doing that. I need to keep doing that. That's the man I do want to be. And there's part of that is stoking that fire every day, right? I mean, like, that's a hard thing for me. It has not always been something. I've done a lot of checklist and check the box, and that's a lot of how I've lived my life. And I've gotten better of living intentionally, and there's still a lot of work to do. Like, that's definitely true.
It doesn't sound like, and tell me if I'm wrong, sounds like this is an in-home separation. I wouldn't classify this as a therapeutic separation. In that it's not laid out with the therapist, the things you're working on, how you're checking in with each other, what you're noticing, what you're not noticing. That's not happening. It's just an in-home separation, right?
I would say that piece of it was the piece that I was willing to start looking at more in April, right? And instead, I feel like there's been some major backslide in the meantime.
So Chris, I don't know if you trust Jesse or not, but what she's saying is, I do want to work toward that. I just don't feel enough safety in order to step into that yet. And I know that feeling of indefinite, you know, is like, oh, well, when is it going to be? When's it going to come? And there's got to be a part of it for you that's going to be vulnerable and not know. And then you, and this, like Tyler said, this is excruciatingly hard to then turn back to yourself and say, okay, this space that I have from her right now is a huge opportunity for me. I've struggled with codependency. She's making our lives more independent. And this is an opportunity. How can I be okay unto myself in this moment and not know whether we're going to get back together or not? And what's my limits? How long do I wait? You know, how long can I sit in this indefiniteness? Another thing I want to mention, kind of backtracking, her grenades. I want you to understand, Chris, her grenades are awesome. They are an awesome opportunity for you. So
what word are you saying?
her grenades are awesome.
Grenades. Like when she's dropping grenades in there. Yeah.
They're awesome because they show something. They're awesome for two reasons. They're showing that Jesse's not apathetic toward you. And apathy is the opposite of love. It's the hardest place to come back from for a couple. She still has emotions around you, Chris, which is showing that she still cares. It's a good thing that she's still upset by some things that you do. Now, the second reason why they're awesome, these grenades, is they give you opportunity to build trust. So in those moments when she drops a grenade, you can both be boundaried and step up for yourself and show how much you love yourself, and you can be loving and kind and empathetic to her pain. And if you can figure out how to do those two things at the same time, when she lobs a grenade at you, she's going to be like, whoa, who's this man? What's going on? Like, where's the Chris that crumbles, or the Chris that gets really mad when I drop this grenade? This guy's like, he's strong enough to handle it and to deal with what he needs to on his own. I know I make that sound simple. This is not easy. But do you understand what I'm saying, Chris?
Yeah, I do. Thank you for that. Love that. The grenade. But yeah, no, I think it is like, in part of the challenge, honestly, is one, I don't always do it well, but I have done some of that, I would say even recently, and it doesn't go well. And the go well doesn't have to be the measure, like where I try to be boundaried and try to have empathy. I think the reality is I need to do that more consistently and then see how it plays out. But it's a struggle when I try to do that and the boundaries aren't respected, or they're looked at as just kind of ducking the issue, etc. So and there's no structure to like come back to some of these conversations and things right now. That's part of the no man's land of like, okay, we could circle back to it, but we're not really, you know, it escalates pretty quickly, like, or spirals pretty quickly. And it's not always me that's doing that, right? Sometimes it is, for sure.
Yeah, I would maybe add one more piece to the gift of the grenade, Brandon. Mm-hmm. That I think is important, and I think this actually speaks to helping to circle back sometimes. Jesse, you don't want to be the one throwing grenades. We know that. Like, that's coming from a source of pain and probably a source that's maybe outside of your values sometimes too, and that's your work to do. And you could maybe learn to package it up differently or say it differently from time to time too. Like, so there's obviously that side of it, but, but when it gets thrown in there, Brandon, you mentioned the two things. One is the first one was that this is good for him because number one, it shows she still cares in a weird way. It still shows she cares. And number two, it's a way for you to step into like actually giving a good response towards trust. But the third thing that's also important here is that sometimes it's at least a worthy exercise to at least do the exercise that the grenade is laced with pieces of truth. And if I step away, maybe I have to go, wow, that's too a lot for me to handle. I wish we could talk about it at a different level, or I wish you maybe said it differently, but let me go think about that. And then inside the grenade, it's like, yeah, well, you don't even know how to be honest. You don't have an honest bone in your body. It's like, well, I could fight and defend my supposed honor on that because I actually am honest in lots of ways. Or I could walk away from that and go, you know what? I can tell that we're pretty amped up. Let me go think about that for a minute. And then the structure when I come back is actually I find the piece of truth that was in the grenade and I let the rest of it go. And I say, you know what? I've been thinking about this and I have a problem with honesty. I'm working really hard on that in these areas. And I realize that I still have this part of a problem with honesty. And this is my new commitment towards it, whether you believe me or not. But yeah, thanks for the feedback. I need to work on it.
But that has to be genuine.
It needs to be curious and genuine, right?
Yeah.
But then what ends up happening is that we become a gift to one another, even in the bad things we do. It would be better if we did them in kind ways. Like it would be way better if, you know, if Brandon came to me and was like, hey, Tyler, I love you, man. You're a good dude. You're working really hard, but you got this kind of little honesty issue right here that really bugs me. That would be better than, hey, Tyler, you don't have an honest bone in your body. But the truth is, I have a problem with honesty. So I'm going to come back and take ownership for that and say, thank you. You were a mirror to me. I wish it was packaged up differently, but thank you. And I'm going to work on it in these ways, whether you believe me or not. And then the proof will be in the pudding when I actually go and follow through on what I said I'm intended to do. And if I'm not going to do it, I shouldn't say it.
So the mix is, it's both boundaries. It's being willing to be empathetic and step into the emotion of the other person.
Curiosity and ownership.
And then it's curiosity and listening to the feedback. And then being honest with what that feedback is for you or not. It's not just ingesting it automatically, but no. It's like, yeah, I've taken a look at this. I'm wondering if
Brandon,
we could.
Before you go there, I might even come back and say, I really thought hard about this. And I can see it from your perspective that it makes sense that it looks this way.
Yeah.
And I don't see it that way.
Right.
Even that shows I thought about what you said.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. That's good. I'm just wondering if we could kind of walk through this just a little bit. If you could give an example of a possible grenade that you might throw out to Chris, we'll just kind of, Chris, with you, walk through what it would look like to actually create safety and connection with that. Would you guys be willing to do that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Give us a grenade, Jesse.
Oh, gosh.
Pull the pin.
Let's see. I would probably say something like, you put me on the spot. Can you think of a recent one? I would say something like, I guess this was a recent one, like I had come across a podcast that sort of spoke to me. And I debated in my own head whether to bother to send it or not, right? Is this how I want to be? Is this how I want to show up? Whatever, right? And part of that debate was also laced with like the fear that, that he's gonna not want me to be, stay out of my recovery. you don't, you know, and I wanted to express that, like, I feel like the few times I've sent things, like, there's no discussion, there's no circling, there's no follow up. And that feels like salt in the wound to me. And so saying that is then one more like negative thing that I've said, and I've said, you never follow up and you never listen, you know, there's no ownership and there's no accountability on following up with anything with me. And it sort of spirals into a bigger thing.
Yeah, this is so perfect. She sent me a text podcast, but didn't ask for anything back. And like, I am listening to other podcasts. I don't think I've actually listened to that one, but we could definitely roll with that. It's fine.
It's the spiraling into the bigger lack of ownership and accountability and follow through. And those are where the grenades tend to go. That's where those conversations tend to go and become about me characterizing him as a person.
Gotcha. This is perfect. So Chris, when she does characterize you as a person, saying always or never, you never actually follow up, you never whatever care or listen, or what's your typical response?
It's varied, but I mean, there's definitely trends, and the varied part is sometimes I'll just kind of listen to it. Sometimes I'll shut down because it's like, okay, well, I heard an always and never, so this is never going to go anywhere. I'll use my own never positive. So I might just kind of withdraw, even if I'm still listening in the conversation, but emotionally withdraw. Other times I'll defend. I'll say, well, yeah, that I can own part of it, but I also, here's examples where I'm not that, you know, I am, you know, the opposite of that. So there's the deflect. Typical would be either withdraw or defend. Those are probably more typical. It doesn't always happen, but those are the trends.
Okay. So, and Tyler, step in here with this wherever. What I'm noticing there, now I'm not hearing Jesse say, you're a dirty, rotten scoundrel, I hate your guts, you piece of crap. Like, she's not attacking you. And I'm just checking out boundaries here, right? Like, she's
that's not the norm. I would say that has happened, but that's not the norm for me.
Okay. So it's in this example, this is more just kind of like your frustration boiling over of not feeling like he cares. And
yes. And things like you're selfish or you're this or you're that will come out in that. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that there's some kind of attacking.
Like labeling. Yeah.
Yeah. So Chris, what I'm noticing is when you say your typical response, do you see how it's all about you, protection of self? So here she is saying, you never listen to what I send you, or you don't care, right? If you make it about her in that moment, it looks a lot different than making it about you. So there's a part of you that believes that she can define you, or that she's telling you exactly who you are. If she says to you, you never listen to what I send to you, you don't even care, you're not working your recovery, what does making it about her look like?
I think whether I verbalize it or not, maybe I wouldn't, but my own view would be like, okay, so she must be feeling something. She's feeling maybe fear, anger, sadness, something along those lines, and identify her emotion. And how can I have empathy in that? Because I've like Brene Brown, right? I've felt fear or whatever, you know, sadness.
That's a great answer. So
beautiful.
You to step toward her in that moment. She needs to know that you're meeting those bids for connection. In this grenade she's dropping, she's saying, I want to be seen. I want to be cared about. I want to be fought for. And you're retreating. You're saying, oh, she thinks I'm bad, I'm not good enough. For you to stop and say, whoa, like, it sounds like you're frustrated. Tell me more. I don't know exactly what you're feeling, but I do want to know. What are you feeling? That's a much different response. Do you see that, Chris?
Yeah, it is. But it's chicken and the egg, because what you've identified before is still the work that I'm on that I don't have a lot of strength in. of my own self-worth and lack of codependency and healthy attachment, because this is the relationship that I've had the most emotional intimacy with, and I'm afraid of losing it. And I don't have a lot of emotional intimacy elsewhere. I'm trying to build on some of that with some friendships and things like that. But I know, so your answer and how I can do that, I have done that when I am in a healthy mental split, healthy identity, then I can show up better there. And that's the work to keep doing so that I can show up there. But I'm not always there. That's definitely true.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good thing to recognize. I think that's important part of what Brennan's going here is, it's the recognition of that however she packages it up, whether it's like, hey, Chris, I'd love to have a conversation with you about your integrity versus you're never honest versus you suck and you're a slime ball. It doesn't matter how it gets packaged up. It goes through a funnel. And on the other end, what you hear every time is you suck. And so the work that you have personally is to actually take that, and here's maybe an exercise that's been beneficial for me in the past, is that when I feel, you got to recognize for what it is, when you feel your own shame, and you'll feel it either in your defensiveness or your withdrawal, you'll feel it in your body, recognize it and attend to it for a split second. There's my shame. Now, you don't have to bring the shame into the conversation just yet, but recognize it. And what I do is I picture grabbing it and holding it, and then I just put it outside of myself right underneath my arm. So it's still there. It's under my wing. My shame is still there, but this is not about my shame right now. And then I can lean into the exercise that Brandon's talking about for as long as I can until I'm at the breaking point. And then I'm going to have to say, I want to give you my best response and I don't have it right now. Give me a bit of time and I'll come back and address this. And now when I leave, I take this shame that's under my arm and I go and I put it to the places where I can become resilient to it. I call my sponsor. I call my friends. I do some self-compassion. I do some dailies. I do some grounding. I do some meditation. Whatever it takes to get that addressed into a place of self-compassion again. And then I'm going to return back to my wife and say, hey, based on that conversation, I've thought about it. Here's where I think you're right. Here's what I want to work on. Here's where I see you. Here's how I see you. And now you're getting a rep in on the right way to approach building trust rather than just letting it default all the way back into I suck every time.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I wonder too on the, maybe you could speak to like, so I've done some of that in the last couple of months. The reality is it has to be consistent and sustained. Like that, yes. That's the reality. And I am not consistent and sustained yet on that. And the boundaries of trying to like come back to it and leave a conversation have not gone well. I wonder what, if you could speak to that to help maybe help me have that backstop in that, where I am trying to say, hey, I'm at my limit. I need to step away.
This is where the codependence gets in the way.
But then there's more text. There's more comment. Like she won't leave it alone.
That's right. That's where the codependence gets in the way. And then you're like, well, I better hurry and stay because if I run away, that means I'm running away and I'm da 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 da. And it's like, actually, no, it's turning back to her and saying, I can tell that we're out of sorts right now. And I know this is hard for you too. And I want to give you the best response possible. So I will come back. I've got to go get my head and heart right. And I hope that buys her some time to do the same.
Yeah. And I would say that's the piece for me that is missing, is that I will come back. And so if there's an I will come back, like it's a little it's those times when that fear gets the best of me and he's never gonna back, we're never gonna talk about this again. And so I better just get everything out that I have to say now because we're never having this conversation again. Mm-hmm. I'd rather say my piece and have it out there in the world than whatever, you know, that, and that's sort of where some of that comes from. That's my work to do too, I realize. But yeah, the circling back would be a piece of it.
Yeah. And circling back and then communicating in a way where there's some resolution. And when I say resolution, that doesn't mean agreement. It means understanding.
It means I see you.
Seen. Yeah. And cared about. And if okay, your pain is that and my pain is this, and we view this very differently, but you care and you see me and we're working together here. And you can take these mishaps, these struggles, and they actually turn into the soil of growth toward repair. It's awesome. They're opportunities, but right now they're not. Right now they come up and they split you guys apart. The resentment grows bigger, and the chance of reconciliation gets a little bit further apart. So I was asking a group of mine. There was like 10 men in the group, and I said, "Who of all your people in your life, who are you most afraid of?" And unanimously, guess who they said?
Their wife.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say it.
So think about it. Like, I'll just speak my inner maybe judgments here, but my first thought was, you bunch of weaklings. Like, here you are wanting them to like give you more sex and be closer to you, and you're scared to death of them. Right. But really it lends to something deeper. And it's that I'm scared of you because you hold so much weight about me. And when I hear that I'm scared of my wife, you know what I hear? I hear that I don't know God.
Like, I don't know who fully, I am.
I don't fully understand who I am. So therefore I need my wife to validate me, to give me that okayness. And if that's the case, then this whole process of like trying to get her to love me, and then like, good, she loves me, so I'm happy. But then I messed up. She doesn't love me anymore. So now I'm defensive, and it's not addressing the underlying issue. And that interdependency happens when you can separate out from your spouse, stand on your own two feet, and know who you are. And then you can give space for your partner's healing process. So that's the work that needs to be done. And it is a catch-22, Chris, because being motivated because you want to work on the relationship, that's not a bad thing. That's external motivation. You want to get back to good intimacy and connection and love in your relationship. That's all fine and dandy. That's wonderful. But that alone as your motivation will not get you where you want to get to. You have to almost let go of the relationship so that you can create the relationship that you want. So
there's those are great, Brandon. And I would just maybe add to like Chris, your question, and Jesse kind of spoke to it. It's funny because I think that Chris, you feel the same things in this never ending separation of all I need is a touch point. All I need is a touch point. And Jesse's saying the same thing, that when he's getting ready to disappear and shrink away or get defensive or whatever, that I'm going to lose anything that I had to, a chance for him to hear me. So I'm just going to throw it all out there right now and try to keep him engaged. All she needs is a touch point. And if there's an assurance on either side that we're going to have a touch point, then we can handle a little bit of distance and disconnection while we wrestle with some of these things. But the way that I come back for the touch point is that in my distance, I have to get my heart right. I have to get regrounded to true principles. And when I step back in, I'm stepping in towards the other person and understanding them, rather than stepping in to defend my supposed honor. And when I do that, I'm showing good faith that I see you. I'm trying. I'm putting in effort here. And she may or may not throw me a cookie and be like, oh, good job. You're a good boy. Way to go. Good work. That doesn't matter. What I've done is I've invited a change to the system by going back and having that touch point. And the touch point is usually going to include curiosity, empathy, or accountability, or all of those together. And when that happens, it at least invites a new starting place for the conversation, and it might last 30 seconds before it's time for another timeout and a promised new touch point. Like, and that's what happens over and over again. Yeah. So We're just about up against time, you guys. Any thoughts or feelings or questions running through you before we finish today?
I don't think I have any other questions. I appreciate what you've said.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think it's a challenge to keep working on all of that. It's stuff that I have touched on recently, like some of the key parts that I know I need to keep working on in my own identity and focuses for me, my identity, my shame resiliency. And I think ultimately the byproduct of those two things is increased empathy for whatever Jesse has and space for that. And some of the work that I did recently Jurgens or whatever, Help or Heal, that book that talks about similar to what you're just talking about on how to contain that space and show back up with ownership, accountability, and empathy ultimately, right? So
if I could just say before I let you guys go, I do think a very specialized good therapist could be really helpful right now. And that what that therapist would do if I were working with you guys is I would separate you out into individual therapy, but we would be aware of what both of you are working on and then talk about reintegration into that relationship slowly. And it might be pushing you, Jesse, to say, hey, it's time to extend a little trust, or maybe it's time to have some more distance. But we're aware of what's going on. So there is another person that's helping guide you toward those things. So a good therapist that would separate and do individual therapy with you and then start to integrate some couples therapy. And I would say this, if it could be the same therapist, a therapist to hold those boundaries and do that has to be really good. They have to know what they're doing. Someone like Tyler or McCall is perfect. But I think they're both full, so they're hard to get in with.
That is a true statement.
So, but I would recommend that right now. I think that could be good. And that doesn't mean, like I said, Jesse, that doesn't mean you're diving in the deep end here.
Yeah.
It just means you're conscious of what's going on and aware, and you're getting some guidance with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
that's good, Brandon. Yeah. Thank you guys for your willingness to come on today. Matt, I know that you speaking what you spoke today is going to touch a lot of people, because this is the very same place that they are too. So I hope you guys know that you're not alone, and also that you showing up here today was a courageous way of helping others as well. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thank Respect you. Both of you and your work. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. And for those of you listening, if this hits home for you, you want to throw a shout out to Chris and Jesse, go and leave a review and make sure you mention them. That's one way to be able to reach them and express your gratitude to them. And if this hits home for somebody else that you know, please feel free to share it. And until next time, you guys, keep on keeping on.